Next item I have on the agenda is presentation by Dr. Bob Orth and Dr. Chris Patrick, the esteemed Virginia Institute of Marine Science annual review of the status of submerged aquatic vegetation. Who's going to proceed with this one first? Dr. Orth or Dr. Patrick?
Let me unmute them. They're probably struggling.
Hold on a second.
He's good.
Dr. Orth or Dr. Patrick, you are unmuted and ready to roll.
Okay. Good morning, Commissioner Bowman and Commissioners. This is Dr. Orth. I'm going to leave off the presentation. I want to let you know we appreciate very much your giving us the opportunity to be here via this strange way of presenting, but you will be used to it. Before I get to the presentation, I'm delighted to present to you Dr. Chris Patrick. Dr. Patrick was hired this past year to take over the SAD program, and as some of you know, and this is true, there's no rumor, I will be retiring in January of 2021 after being at FMS for 47 years and 8 months.
Congratulations, Bob. Well done. We'll be talking to you before then, though, but congratulations.
Thank you very much. Well, like I said, I'm delighted that FMS was willing to advertise my position. We did a nationwide, worldwide search. Dr. Patrick was the person of choice. And I'm going to let him introduce himself to you today because he'll be taking over the program. It's not that I'm going to go away forever. I'll be here to work with Dr. Patrick if needed as a mentor. But I'm absolutely delighted that VIMS chose Dr. Patrick to head the SAD program. So with that, I'm going to next slide is Dr. Patrick, and he'll give you a little background of himself so you know where he's coming from.
Please proceed.
Hey, good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. Since I'm not in control of the clicks, whoever's running the presentation can just kind of click through these. There's a couple more clicks. I just wanted to give everyone a brief background on, you know, who I am, where I'm coming from. I'm actually from Maryland originally. University of Maryland is my alma mater. And I got my start in research there, working with folks at UMD. And then I left, went out to the Midwest for 5 years, where I was at the University of Notre Dame doing watershed research, and then I was able to come back. And I spent a stint at the Smithsonian Environmental Research Center back in Maryland, and that's where I really started diving into seagrass and SAD research. I did quite a lot of research there, looking at the effects of land use and shorelines and stability on SAD communities. That's actually where I first met Dr. Orth, and we started working together on some of these projects. So from there, I went to the EPA on a AAAS Science and Technology Policy Fellowship, kept working on SAV, but also nutrient criteria issues. And then I left the region again. I went down to Texas on the Gulf Coast. I was a professor at Texas A&M University, Corpus Christi. And I kept a foot in the door with Chesapeake Bay Research. I was part of the SAV synthesis team that JJ and Bill Dennison led. But I also got involved with seagrass research on the Gulf, working with tilapia, Halidule beds. I missed the Chesapeake, and I was really, really pleased and fortunate to have the opportunity to come back here and join the community again and take over this program. So I've been here since January. I've been working really closely with Dr. Orth. He's been showing me all the tricks of the trade, all of his old long-term monitoring sites and field sites. It's been a heck of a long time, many hours out in the coastal bays this summer and working on restoration projects, sea collections. So I'm really excited to be here, and I'm excited to work with y'all.
Great.
And this is a quick note. VIMS was really, really very nice to me and to Dr. Patrick by allowing us the opportunity for the transition period because of the high visibility and high priority of this program and how much we work with you. Dr. Patrick has a great research background, a great theoretical and statistical background, but he also is very interested in the applied aspects, and we've been stressing that. Of course, that is part of what VIMS does, to be your advisors. And Dr. Patrick, I think, will carry on the tradition of working very closely with you, your staff, and dealing with a lot of the issues that we've been dealing with in the past. They aren't going to go away.
Well,
so with that,
Bob,
you can answer my question.
Bob, sir. I do have one point to make. I hope you have inculcated into him the passion that you have exhibited through all these many years for this very, very important program. He's got some big shoes to fill, and I'll say that right straight out front as Commissioner of Marine Resources. I'm sure he'll do a great job, but we're going to miss you as well. So with that, proceed, please.
Yeah. Okay, well, trust me that Vims was very careful in the selection process, and I have no doubt that Dr. Patrick will follow in the footsteps and do really well. And, again, he's going to develop his own program. But I think that, as I mentioned, his background really puts him in a very nice place to work with you. And, again, we stress our role as advisors to you in a fair and objective way.
And I'll just say I 100% fully recognize the size of the shoes that I am stepping into. And I see myself very much as a caretaker of a program that has been fantastic. It's been up and running for a very long time. And I said it on my interview, and when I was talking with all the staff, JJ staff that I'm now managing, I see my role really to support them and enable them to continue to do the great work that they have been doing.
All good.
Okay, so with that, next slide. So we have our typical agenda, YSAB, next slide. Again, I always like to do some board stuff to always bring into you the fact that, underwater grasses are the canary in the cage. And in particular now, as we talk a lot about climate change, these plants are definitely the key indicator that we need to watch really carefully as our climate changes. And you guys are hearing, and women are all hearing, the importance of our research in following what happens with not just SAV, but the other resources in the bay with climate change. Next slide. Okay, just again to highlight the water quality standards that we have here for both Virginia and Maryland, and again playing a very important role in climate change about restoration targets. Every acre that we have in SAV is important and meeting these restoration targets by parts of the bay. Next slide. Keep on. Now we're going to do the bay-wide status. Okay, so in terms of the bay-wide status and trends, again, we use aerial imagery to map the beds. And as you know, the imagery that we collect, we put online so that every one of you and the staff and the aquaculture people and the citizens can see our work. We are as transparent as anyone regarding placing our data on the web. Next slide. Again, we report all the data based on different segments, and these segments all have restoration targets. Next slide. And again, just to show you, this is a typical image that we map. And again, we map by density class. And I know there has been obviously lots of discussions about how these classes change, in particular that one that's called density class one. We work very closely with the commission and staff on dealing with how these beds change over time and how this may influence where individuals may want to place particular leases. So with that, I'm going to now turn over the presentation to Dr. Patrick, who this is his first year in overseeing the monitoring program, and he'll be working with you from henceforth. But this is the presentation on the actual data for the 2019 year. So, Dr. Patrick?
Yep, I'll hit the slide. So, if you hadn't heard, 2019 was not a great year for SAV. In fact, 2019 may be the single worst year in terms of a drop from 2018 that we've seen in the record. We lost fully 33% of total grass coverage bay-wide. This is not including the coastal bays. This is Main Chesapeake Bay, Maryland, Virginia. Click. So just as a reminder, we've got four different salinity zones that we consider. So in the upper bay, the tidal fresh is 0 to 0.5 salinity. 0.5 to 5 is oligohaline. Then we've got the 5 to 18, the mesohaline. 18 to 30, the polyhaline. And there's some really different communities of SAV, different species that are present in each one of these zones. Click. So while 2019 wasn't a great year, if you look at just the upper bay, those tidal fresh and oligohalean regions, we actually saw that there was a bit of an increase. We didn't see big losses in those areas. Click. All of these losses that we observed were in the mesohaline and polyhaline, and really the mesohaline. If you look in this third graph down on the right, you can see a big drop there. And if you look at the scale, you know, we're going from 60,000 to like 22,000. So what's going on? Click. One more. There we go. Okay, so this figure in the upper left, these are areas of the bay which we know are pretty much all rubia. There might be a little bit of this and that mixed in, but mostly it's rubia. And so if you look at rubia coverage through time, Wijngrass, what you'll see is, you know, we had a major, major crash in Wijngrass between 2018 and 2019. The closest thing that we've seen like that was between 2002 and 2003, and that wasn't nearly as large as this. And where these losses occurred were primarily in the Tangier Sound and the Honga. 65% of the losses that we saw occurred there. So just massive losses of Wijngrass. And we've never seen anything quite like this in the record. Slide. One more. Okay, so I think that in past presentations, Dr. Orth has really communicated well the fact that eelgrass, Zostera, is experiencing these heat stress events, and we're seeing slow declines in eelgrass because of that. What that means for us and for Virginia waters is that the functions that we care about that the SAV provides, we're going to become more and more dependent on rubia, Wijngrass, and we don't really fully understand what causes these big swings in Wijngrass. I couldn't tell you with any certainty what precisely caused this 2018 to 2019 crash, because it's not something that's been a research focus in the past. So it's becoming a new research focus of the lab so we can understand this. So we've got a couple of new projects coming up. You can just click through these. Let's see. So the first one is in Broad Bay. In Lynn Haven, we're working on a new seed-based restoration of Wijngrass and eelgrass. This is hopefully going to be, we're hoping it'll be the first successful seed-based restoration of Wijngrass. We've got some students that are looking at what are the best practices for collecting and planting rubia seeds. We've also hired a postdoctoral researcher to start looking into all the long-term data we have and really focus on just the Wijngrass and understand what is driving these big ups and downs in Wijngrass, and, you know, how can we use that in management planning in the future? So some really exciting stuff, and I'm hoping by next year we'll have some things to share with you about what's going on.
Okay, next slide. Okay, so we're going to launch quickly into the topics of the SAV sanctuary in Chincoteague and the propeller scarring that the commission has been very proactive in providing proper guidance. And this is the SAV sanctuary in Chincoteague. In the last few years, we've had difficulty getting aerial imagery to see if these propeller scars that were formed by clambers that were dredging through grass bays. And as you know from the past, the BMRC created these sanctuaries that we marked. The 2020 data, which we collected from imagery, indicates that the sanctuary that we've got continues to work very well. And my best bet to say thank you to the marine police, who are very important in this entire process and keeping these sanctuaries the way they are.
Dr. Orth, I have just a quick question. You had indicated that you'd had difficulty as far as getting aerial photography. What was the impediment to that?
Atmosphere and Wallace Island. You know, they shoot rockets at Wallace, and whenever we go, we have to clear what we do through Wallace Island. And if they're shooting, we can't fly. They won't let anything go over there. So that's been one of our big problems.
Well, I'm familiar with that.
Clear the airspace, and that has been a big problem, so we try to work around it. But we did get some good imagery in May, and it shows that the scar has pretty much been contained, which we thought, you know, was what was happening. But again, I do want to say a thank you to the Marine Police. They keep their eyes on the water, people that don't want to follow the rules and regulations. So, okay, next slide. The propeller scarring, again, this is something that we've been talking about every year because you provide us with funds to monitor this, keeping the eye in the sky and keeping track of what's going on. Next slide. We monitor several sites, but look around the bay. Most of the sites that we've seen, the scarring in the past, are the Pocosin area and the mouth of York and Browns Bay area. Next slide. This was the typical slide that I showed you that got us started in terms of the extent of scarring. Next slide. And again, we use the aerial imagery every year. So again, going back in history, we proposed that this scarring damage grass beds, our research found that these scars do colonize and recover pretty quickly. You see that through time, they've been reduced. There's still some scarring, but if you recall, the idea was that these did not want to say no to any kind of falsing because we know how important that fishery is to certain members of the fishery community. And so while we do see some scarring, the scarring has been contained and it grows. And this is the record for the Pocosin. And the next slide is the Browns Bay. Similarly, again, very low levels of scarring. I do want to at least emphasize that it's important to monitor because when people know they're being monitored, hopefully they adhere to the rules and regulations that BMRC has enacted to protect the grass beds. Next slide. We'll launch into the seaside work, and this is our Keystone project that we're very proud of. Next slide. This is the work that we've been doing funded by so many different organizations, including BMRC's recreational fishing license. The whole goal is to reestablish eelgrass in these coastal lagoons. And the services they provide, in particular the bay scallop. The next slide. Okay, here are the data up through 2020 showing for these four bays that we've been doing our work, Hog Island, Spider Crab, Cobb, and South Bay. The color lines match the bays that the beds are being restored and colonized naturally through 2020. So the story here is very, very different than what we see in the Chesapeake. And in 2020, we mapped almost 9,500 acres, so the beds continue to expand. Most of those areas are significant areas in South Bay. But this is kind of a cool project because it shows us, you know, what happens when you have good water quality and the water is cooler than what we see in the Chesapeake. The beds just continue to expand. So we're pretty proud of this project because, again, the funding has been from multiple sources, but BMRC's Recreational Fishing License Fund has been an important supporter, and we thank again the Commission for supporting this project. The next slide. We're going to do the base scallop update, and again, Chris has taken over this project. You've heard of me talk before, but I'm going to let Chris tell you the latest and greatest of this base scallop work. Chris?
All right, the slide. More animations. Let's just go ahead and click through these. Yeah. So as you guys are probably aware, there's been an ongoing effort partnership between the VIMS campus here in Gloucester Point and the VIMS Eastern Shore Lab to restore the bay scallop to these the coastal bays after the recovery of the eelgrass. And we've been following a monitoring system that dates back to 2015. There's some surveys that have been done before that, but we really honed in on the right methodology, a spatially balanced design for looking at everything throughout this South Bay and Cobb Bay area. And so when you look at the data, what we have in the upper right here is the last 3 years of surveys, so 2018, 2019, and 2020. And each one of these points is a location where a team drove up there in a boat and did multiple transects, actually 51 meter squared, like small surveys at each one of those points, counting and measuring all the base scallops and also some other mollusks that we use as kind of tracers. And what you can see, the size of these points corresponds to the number of scallops that were found at that location. And just kind of eyeballing it, you can see between 2018, 2019, and 2020, the size of those dots are getting larger. And when we look down in the time series with the average number of scallops per site, we are definitely seeing an increasing trend over the last 3 years in the number of bay scallops. So this is encouraging. We're nowhere near where we'd like to be in terms of overall population density, but to see this kind of positive trend over the last 2 years is great. We're hoping that it's going to continue. So we're going to be continuing to do our annual monitoring to check on how things are developing, and also starting some projects to see if we can understand why. You can see there might be some hot spots on this map where we have a lot more scallops and some areas where there's less. So trying to understand what about those hot spots make them particularly good places for scallops, and maybe using that to inform some of our future planning with the ongoing restoration.
An interesting anecdotal, this is Dr. Worth, this is an interesting anecdotal part is that we've heard from the people that are in clam aquaculture, they are finding lots of bay scallops now in their nets, which indicates that there's a lot of spread of these little baby larvae throughout the bay. And as Dr. Patrick has mentioned, you know, the motivation is to really consider whether we would have any kind of a home-based scallop fishery, or even to entice individuals that may want to launch into an aquaculture-based fishery for bay scallops, given the demand that we see for seafood these days.
Mm-hmm.
Next slide. So just a quick summary since we're wrapping up. As we've said before, many times, water quality is the major driver for SAB distribution. A lot of questions now, what happened in 2019, and I trust that Dr. Patrick will be looking at this question very, very carefully and be able to provide some additional information maybe the next time he presents this. Our scarring, you know, low levels, but you got to keep on monitoring. I think that's important. And then the Virginia coastal bays, an exciting project because you don't see what we see in the coastal bays in a lot of places around the world. And the bay scallop, as Dr. Patrick just presented, is really an exciting part of this, and we hope that this project will continue and show promise. Next slide. So the action items, next slide. One of those has already been done. You approved funding for the pellet scarring for this year. Again, thank you very much. We appreciate it. We would like to know that your continued support for the SAB annual monitoring is important because we know that this comes into a major play when we work with the aquaculture people because we want to know where these grass beds are. And the continuation of your support for our seaside work, which has been supported by the Recreational Fish License Fund. And that we can't say enough to say thank you. Thank you to those people who have supported it, you commissioners who have supported it, and again, for the Marine Police that are out there that watch over us and the people that are influencing these beds. Next slide. One more slide. Okay, so finally, I want to share with you something that's probably the most exciting thing in my long career at VIMS. This is a paper that's coming out in this journal called Science Advances. This is one of the top journals in the world. It's looking at the seaside work, the restoration in the seaside. It's authorship by people from VIMS, University of Virginia, the Smithsonian, and the Nature Conservancy. And what we here demonstrate in this paper, the return of the seagrasses, but also the neat things that this system provides. And so we talk about the bay scallops. We talk about the fish. We talk about small invertebrates that serve as food and the nitrogen and carbon storage that these beds provide. I guess I look at this gentleman as my penultimate paper as I leave them. It's my last senior author paper probably in my career, but it embodies close to 25 years of work on the seaside and has been one, probably the most exciting project that I've had in my career here, is to see how quickly a system can recover with a little bit of help from both us and by nature. And so with that, I think the last slide is a thank you. And if you have any questions, again, I want to let you know how much I have personally enjoyed working with you, commissioners, the other previous commissioners, all of them for the last 30 years, all the commissioners themselves who have been great supporters of the work that we do and that Vince does in being advisors to the commission. I look forward to supporting the program and Dr. Patrick to the best of my ability as a background person. But I'll always be there in mind and heart. And again, thank you very much for your support, commissioners, for all the stuff you've done for me and Vince. Thank you. And we're now entertaining any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Worth. As again, it's been a pleasure to work with you. You've been one that we could turn to when we had questions, and you've always been extremely, extremely passionate. You didn't just go through the motions. We could tell that there was a palpation that you could feel that you were very, very dedicated to this project, and we're going to miss you. Do any members of the commission have a question for Dr. Orth or Dr. Patrick?
Mr. Bowman, Christy Everett.
Ms. Everett, proceed, please.
Yeah. I just want to echo Commissioner Bowman's sentiments that we've been very fortunate, Dr. Orth, to have your leadership and stewardship of this resource, and we're going to miss you, to say the least. Look forward to using your research to continue on protection of this effort, and Dr. Patrick, look forward to working with you. I don't know if this is too heavy of a question, but the research paper you just identified and taking the research for the last 25 years and understanding how important SAV is and how critical it is to once restore to other functions of the ecosystem, is there any way to kind of translate that into the potential for the bay? Obviously, as you mentioned in your summary slide, there's the trigger of water quality, and without that water quality, you can't have healthy SAV beds. And so we're still stuck there in many ways, or, you know, a little bit of a roller coaster in terms of, you know, return and then taking a step back. But just wanted to see, is there hope for the bay like there has been in terms of the seaside restoration work? Again, maybe a loaded question, but just wanted to ask since it's part of your presentation.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for that compliment, and I'll echo again my thanks to all of you. Regarding the work that we've done on the seaside and the lessons that we've learned from there for the bay, I've said repeatedly that these coastal bays have taught us how important water quality is for underwater grasses, in particular the polyhalin grasses, eelgrass. What we said is that they need good, clear, cool water. I don't know how much we're going to be able to change the water temperatures because of the climate change. I think that we do know from research that these bay grasses need a lot of light. If you can improve the light, the amount of light the plants get, they can tolerate water temperatures a little bit better. And so that's where the water quality component comes in. And you know, as we know, the states are committed to doing whatever they can to improve water quality, to improve, you know, what happens on the land and how it influences here. So yeah, this is the, I guess you want to say, the never-ending story. And why we at VIMS and me personally particularly look forward to Dr. Patrick tackling this for his career at VIMS. And I can guarantee you'll be hearing this story for his career here at VIMS.
And I'd also like to just add, I know that I dropped a little doom and gloom with 2019 being a bad year, but I think it's also important really to put it in perspective. You look at the history of Chesapeake Bay SAV, we are still on a trajectory of improvement. We're still seeing overall across the bay increases. And while 2019 was a bad year, it set us back to where we were like 5 years ago. But in a way, the fact that it's mostly rupia that crashed, that's kind of good news. Because rupia has also demonstrated the ability to bounce back very quickly. And so I would not be surprised if we see some major gains just kind of clawing right back up to where we were back in 2018 over the next couple of years. So if you look at the long-term patterns across the Bay, I think it's a story of recovery. It's obviously slower than in the coastal bays because we've got a lot of different problems in the Chesapeake Bay. But I absolutely think that there's hope, and I think that we're on the right track.
Just remember when Winston Churchill said, now this is obviously an the best analogy, but he said, never, never, never give up. And you know, I think that, you know, people that are committed to saving the Bay just should never give up because we have a long road ahead of us. And as Dr. Patrick said, and as we've seen in other places, you know, we are seeing ups and downs in resources, but the general trend is up. And as you all know from what you have to deal with in terms of all the other resources, fisheries and marshes and all that, this is where you play as commissioners a really important role in the health of the Bay and the resources that you have to, you have been given the honor to protect.
Well, thank you, sir.
Okay.
Further questions for Dr. Orth or Dr. Patrick?
Commissioner Bowman, if there's time, I have one more.
Okie doke. Go ahead.
Thank you. Just so back to that Wigeon loss in 2019 and I think the use of the Honga and Tangier Sound, are you certain that's not water quality related, or is it just so much more research to come? I just didn't know if there was anything that was kind of somewhat obvious and then ruled out, but maybe it's just to be figured out. But I just wanted to dig in a little there.
Well, it's funny. Dr. Orth and I were just chatting about this before the meeting started, and I was going back and just looking, because I thought I'd get a question like this, at the older records. One of the things that's really interesting about 2019 as compared to past years where we've seen big drops, like we've seen big drops in the Middle Bay before, but it was usually accompanied also by big drops in the Upper Bay. Like if we get a bunch of big storms to come through, we'll see losses in the upper parts of the rivers, down through the middle parts of the rivers. This was a fairly localized crash. I mean that's a lot of grass, but it's also a lot of eggs in one basket. That's an area that had a lot of grass. And so because we don't see the accompanying losses in other parts of the Bay, there's something unique about what happened between 2018 and 2019 that is unlike what we see earlier in the record. So it probably is something to do with water quality, but I couldn't tell you precisely what it was. It might have been the timing of a particular kind of event. It could have been a combination of changes in salinity and water clarity. Wigeon grass is a funny species because if you look at where it lives, it can live in a lot of different salinities. It can handle a lot of different light environments. People have reported it living in very low light environments. So if you just take that, you think that it can handle a lot of conditions. So we're trying to understand maybe there's something in the timing of its biology, or maybe it has to do with how fast a certain combination of parameters changes. So I think that it's something to do with water quality, but we don't know precisely what that is yet.
And as Dr. Patrick said, you know, we have a research program that now has a component where we're looking in the Lynnhaven system funded by the Army Corps of Engineers, really focusing on, for the first time in the history of the SAV program, work with Wigeon grass. So I think that the focus of Dr. Patrick's program will really be a real major thrust that will help us understand some of these trends. So, yeah, we look forward to his future presentations.
All right, thank you. Any further questions? Dr. Orth, Dr. Patrick, thank you so much for your presentation. Greatly appreciated. Bob, we wish you good Godspeed. We'll be talking again before your big day.
Okay.
But just remember, once you retire, there's no difference between Saturday night and Tuesday night. So enjoy it.
Yeah, and when that paper comes out next week, I'll make sure I share a copy with all of you.
Please do. Thank you very much.